This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo. Our team thanks you for downloading the Rich Scioli podcast. Relationships matter to all of us. At Cherry Hill Volvo, we will work to gain your trust, your confidence, and in turn, develop a relationship with you, the Rich Scioli listener.
Now, 60 minutes of nonstop talk on the Rich Scioli podcast.
So the coronavirus stimulus bill has not made it out of the Congress yet because the president says there's too much pork in it. He's right, by the way. Joe Biden reappeared, saw his shadow, which means we'll probably have two more weeks of quarantine. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. The Scioli Show on Twitter at Rich Scioli. I want to welcome to the program a great friend of the show, a great friend to all of us, and one of the smartest guys out there when it comes to the law. Andy McCarthy is a senior fellow at National Review and the author of Ball of Collusion, and his latest piece is a must-read, COVID-19 and the Limits of the Law. Andrew C. McCarthy, welcome back to the show. How you been?
Rich, it's my pleasure. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I'm trying to homeschool two kids. Taking it day by day. Taking it day by day.
My kids are a lot older than yours, but believe me, it doesn't get any easier.
I feel like as a nation, we're just trying to take it day by day, right?
Right.
Now, if the president were to say in 7 days, all right, look, enough social distancing, we did our best, go back to work. But the states were to say, no, we're keeping these shelter-in-place orders going. You're not going anywhere. Who wins that legal battle?
Well, it's not really... I wouldn't think of it as a legal battle. What I would think of it as, and I salute the way the president has handled it in this regard, it's a recognition that the way our system is structured, the internal affairs of the states are supposed to be run with an understanding of state sovereignty, where the federal government is the kind of backstop to be supportive. But the states have to deal with their local conditions because the states are closest not only to the voters, but to what those local conditions are. And I think that's why President Trump has been wise largely to turn a deaf ear to all these demands that, you know, he do this or that or invoke this and that in the name of some of these various legal provisions that allow him to jump in and start giving orders to private businesses and to move the federal government more intrusively into state affairs. If the president says that America needs to go back to work, I don't think he's saying, and I think he was pretty clear about this in his briefing yesterday, I don't think he's saying that there's a switch where we go completely on or off, where we're just going to focus on the economic health of the country and forget about the medical health, or in the alternative, go full bore on the medical health no matter what happens to the economy. He kept saying yesterday that we have to do both, which means we have to be sensitive to the conditions to make sure that if we're making progress on this virus, that it doesn't come roaring back because we've done reckless things. But at the same time, If you let the economy collapse, that has a package of problems its own, which are in many ways worse than the virus.
Well, that's a very, very good point. And you bring up a number of great points in your piece. You talk about, too, the extent to which the law is a barrier against future presidential muscle flexing. So let's say this president, because I agree with you 100%, he is absolutely hitting the mark on federalism without question. What would happen, though, if it was a different person in there? And as I said right now, I'm ordering a martial law and a military quarantine, and nobody leaves their home for 2 weeks under penalty of going to federal prison. Could that happen at some point in the future?
Well, The question of whether it could happen, Rich, would depend on what people's sense of fear was from whatever the outside threat was and what it was politically possible to do. And I appreciate your reference to the column, because the point I was trying to make is that while the law is very important and we think of ourselves as a rule of law society, what really calls the tune, especially in times of crisis, is politics and the public sense of how, you know, truly scary a threat is. And just to give a quick example, which I think makes the point, remember about a year, year and a half ago, you and I were talking about whether the president could move money around in the defense budget for purposes of building the wall. And what he was saying is we needed this wall on the southern border, therefore there's an emergency condition, and, you know, under the law, emergency conditions allow him to move money around. So, of course, everybody raised holy hell on Capitol Hill about that, right, saying that you can't take money that Congress has allocated because it's Congress's job to allocate the money and the president executes what Congress passes and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, flash forward a year and a half, here we are now, and people are asking the president why he's not doing more.
Right.
You know, why isn't he ordering private businesses to do this and ordering states to do that? And what's the difference? The difference is politically people are really frightened by the virus, whereas they thought, or at least, you know, the president's political opposition thought he was inventing or fomenting the sense of emergency in order to do something that he politically wanted to do. So really what it comes down to is how frightened do people feel? You know, are we in a Pearl Harbor situation, or are we in a situation where politicians are inventing a sense of urgency to try to get themselves the rhythm to do stuff that they wouldn't ordinarily be able to do?
These are great questions. Andy McCarthy's with me. He's the author of Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. It's a must read if you want to get the real truth about what happened here with this whole Russia nonsense. He's also a senior fellow at National Review, and we're very, very grateful to have him on. His latest piece, COVID-19 and the Limits of Law. You hear a lot about the Stafford Act, the Defense Production Act, and it seems like Democrats who 5 minutes ago were calling him a dictator now want him to take over private industry. And I don't even know how that works, because it's not like the government makes anything. So can you explain that to us and what the limits of that whole thing are?
Yeah, well, let me begin by saying I think you're exactly right in the sense that it just seems like 5 minutes ago they impeached the president and said that he wasn't fit to wield executive power. And now, having failed that, and by the way, having also taken their eye off the ball of all the actual simmering crises that have now come home to roost in a sense, now they want him to exercise dictatorial power after telling us he's not fit to exercise any power. So it really is quite extraordinary. But, you know, there are these provisions in the law. The Defense Production Act is a good example. That came into force in 1950. And what happened in 1950 were kind of emergency conditions like the ones we have now. After World War II, we had demobilized the armed forces. Defense production came way down. The size of our military came way down. There was a thought that because we now had nuclear weapons, we didn't need a military the way that we had it before, that conventional forces were passe, and now we were going to have nuclear forces. And then all of a sudden, reality beckoned. You know, the Soviet tyranny started to encroach in Europe. The Chinese communists won the Civil War. The Korean War broke out. And suddenly, even though we had depleted our own forces, which you would do, which a natural thing to do after a struggle like World War II, we were now behind the eight ball in responding to these threats around the world. So in order to kind of accelerate the remobilization of forces, Congress enacted this Defense Production Act, which actually allowed the president not only to commandeer parts of private industry in order to make sure that the government had military and security, you know, the goods and services that we needed to fulfill those responsibilities. There was a belief that the president could actually come in and, you know, really seize elements of private business in order to respond to crises. And, you know, over time, when the sense of crisis waned, the Congress, as it does with FISA, we've heard all about that, you know, the FISA sunset provisions and how it right. considers them every few years. That was the same thing with the Defense Production Act. So over time, as the sense of threat eased, what Congress did was pare back some of those powers. So we've never really tested in court how constitutional they are. And in point of fact, the Defense Production Act has probably been invoked about 50 times in the 70 years that it's been on the books. But you don't notice it because it's really not all that controversial. It's mainly loans and loan guarantees to make sure that defense contractors produce the things that we need for our national defense.
Yeah, you don't really hear about it. It's true. It's one of those things that makes big attention, obviously, in something like this. Andy, let me ask you this, too. In terms of on the state level, I know that the founders and the framers always thought that the police powers really should be the state's issue and not the right. federal government's issue, thank God. So do governors just have extraordinary power in these kind of things where if they put a curfew in place and it could last indefinitely, can they stop me from, say, traveling to Pennsylvania? You know, I'm in South Jersey. I want to go to Pennsylvania to go to work or something. I mean, do they have the ability to do that, and for how long?
It's really a matter, Rich, of two things. It's state law and the state constitutions, which do give the states and particularly the governors of states a lot of power to control the internal affairs of a state. And then there's the incorporation doctrine in the Bill of Rights. So, for example, some rights that are guaranteed in the federal Constitution, which were only, if you know, you literally understand the Constitution, they were guarantees against federal action. The Supreme Court has incorporated a number of those as if they were so fundamental that the states have to honor them too. So, for example, if a state tried to pass a law that said from now on in trials or in criminal prosecutions, we're going to let the prosecutor call the defendant as a witness, you wouldn't be able to do that because the Supreme Court has incorporated the Fifth Amendment against the state. So they, just like the federal government, they have to respect your right against self-incrimination. So there's a bunch of those federal rights that have been incorporated against the states. But other than that, the states really do control their own affairs. And most of those things are a matter of state law, not federal law.
And so it's really going to depend upon the state then. And sometimes it seems as if there are federal rights that it feels like a state can't get in the way and stop. And yet they're doing that. For example, the right to buy arms, you know, the New Jersey, Pennsylvania, a couple other states have said they don't consider gun shops to be essential businesses. They've closed them. That stops me from being able to exercise my Second Amendment right under the Bill of Rights. And, you know, I've got a real problem with that from a constitutional perspective.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the thing is, if you're living in a red state, the state government is going to be much more solicitous of your individual liberties, including your Second Amendment rights. Whereas if you're living in a state that's run by Democrats, it's going to cut the other way. That's sort of the fact of life as we live in a federalist system. And I think for right. the most part, even though it's frustrating for those of us who live in blue states and care about liberty, it's a really good system because it enables everybody to do things in a different way. And if you don't like it enough where you live, unlike many totalitarian regimes in history, you can pick up and move to a place where you like it better.
Yeah, well said. Well, we always appreciate your legal acumen. You're a brilliant guy, and I appreciate your time, my friend. Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. Andrew C. McCarthy, and I'll post a link to his latest piece, COVID-19 and the Limits of Law. Hang in there, Andy.
You too, Rich. Thanks so much.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
So here's where we are with the rest of the stuff today. Joe Biden made an appearance yesterday, saw a shadow. We'll have two more weeks of quarantine. He also lost track of his teleprompter in the middle of his coronavirus speech. I'm telling you right now, Democrats are freaking out that he's going to be their nominee, but maybe he won't be their nominee. It's always possible. Politics is funny, as you know. Cut one.
I'm glad the president has finally activated the National Guard. Now we need the armed forces and the National Guard to help with hospital capacity, supplies, and logistics. We need to activate the Reserve Corps of doctors and nurses and beef up the number of responders dealing with the crush, these crush of cases. And in addition to that, we have to make sure that we are in a position that we are. Well, let me go to the second thing. I've spoken enough of that. The president must use the Defense
Production Act. Go, you know the thing. Go, you know the thing. Now, apparently what happened, if you watch the video, is he stops talking. He's frantically motioning off camera with a hand below the podium.
Yep.
Like, the podium's not, like, the teleprompter's not going.
It's not updating, yeah.
Yeah, it's not updating. The teleprompter. Give it a teleprompter. And he can't wing it because he's never read the speech before. Because they're at a point with Biden where they go, just go and read it. Don't worry about it. Just read whatever you got to read. And so he hasn't read it yet because he's just going to read it. So he doesn't know, and he can't wing it.
No.
So he's motioning for them, and he's trying to stall, but he can't come up with anything. So then he goes, ah, the hell with it. I'll just go to number two. Ah, the heck with it. So let me go to the second thing. Might have to match with go, you know the thing. And the two of them might have to go together.
In addition to that, we have to make sure that we are in a position that we are. Well, let me go to the second thing.
I've spoken enough on that. You get it. You get the whole troops and the military doing their thing and go, you know the thing.
So bad.
Go to number two. He also confused Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker's name. I mean, what are you going to do? It's not like it's a state he has to win. So cut 1B.
We can put politics aside and meet the moment like governors all across this nation are doing. Governor Mike DeWine in Ohio, Governor Larry Hogan in Maryland, Governor Charlie Parker in Massachusetts, Gavin Newsom in California.
It's Charlie Baker, but it's Governor Peter Parker in the new Marvel Universe cinema. Peter Parker becomes governor of Massachusetts and also Spider-Man by day.
Charlie Parker was a great jazz saxophonist I think he died in 1955. So.
Well, he knows Charlie Parker. He and Charlie Parker fought Corn Pop, if you remember, at the pool in Delaware. I called up Charlie Parker. I said, bring that jazz thing of yours, that thing that you call the sounds out. You know that thing. Bring that thing.
It's a saxophone.
Right. Bring the saxophone over. I'm going to bring it over there to that Corn Pop.
Saxophone, I'd say.
Just move on to the other thing. move on to the next thing in the thing. Ah, the heck with it. So it's like the guy giving up, like, youth is wasted on the wrong people. Like that cranky guy in It's a Wonderful Life. Governor Charlie Parker, Governor Peter Parker, Governor Bruce Wayne. So happy that Governor and Dr. Bruce Banner are with us today as well.
It's the Incredible Hulk.
Oh, man, poor guy. It's like, go back into hiding and maybe just wait this one out, I'm thinking.
Well, everybody was saying, like, what happened to him? So he was like, well, I clearly have to give a speech. Clearly the world is waiting for me to give a speech. And then
it was so bad. It was scripted, and then the script dies. And who decided to do it live is my question.
It's a great.
There's no point of that. You could have just released the video and said it was live.
Yes.
But they could have just recorded it, edited it. And so that whole teleprompter mishap of, let me go to the second thing. Go, you know the thing. Delete that in the ashpans of history. But nope, not so much. Governor Andrew Cuomo, the Love Gov, as it's known, was on with his brother, the Lesser. I want to remind you, this fall on NBC, Love Gov and the Lesser will be premiering 8 p.m. on NBC Thursday nights, Dawn. It's Thursday night funny night.
Stop.
Love Gov and the Lesser. This is at the beginning of this very awkward interview between New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and his idiot younger brother, Chris Cuomo. Why he's back on the show. All right. This little ribbing between the two of them goes on the entire interview, and it's annoying. And but it's too painful to watch. Like, you can't turn it off, you know? But this is how it began with mom and how Mrs. Cuomo, the mom, got involved in all this.
The reality, better than any other right now, at least in New York, is the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, of course, my brother. Thank you for coming back to the show.
Mom told me I had to.
What was your reaction to the reality?
I mean, the Lesser doesn't even acknowledge it. He just moves right on. Because he knows he's right. He knows it's 100% right. Because you know what happened. Ma, he won't come on the show, Ma.
He did.
Andrew, better than any other right now, at least in New York, is the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, of course, my brother. Thank you for coming back to the show.
Mom told me I had to.
What was
And he moves right on. Andrew, it's your mother calling.
Oh, no.
Please go back on Chris's show. He needs you, honey. Please. It's basically like my mother calling. If I had, you know what I mean? If I had an idiot sibling. Please. He needs you to go on his show, please. He's number 14 in the ratings at night. He's almost going to be 12 in the ratings.
Oh, be careful, baby.
Do you think she tells him that she loves him more? You know?
Yeah, Andrew, I know you're smarter and you're my favorite. You're the firstborn. And Chris is not as smart as you. So could you just please go on? Please do it for your mother. And you know that Chris had called his mom to ask him. That's why he just moves right on from him. He doesn't do his little usual, you know, game back and forth. Just moves right on pretending like that never happened. It gets worse, by the way. The lesser, LoveGov and the lesser. So the LoveGov, I call him that now because all these women apparently on social media are talking about how much they're in love with Andrew Cuomo now. And I'm not going to be jealous of the fact. I'm just going to make fun of him for the fact because the LoveGov has to deal with his idiot little brother, Chris. Now, he goes on to, it's your show. This is amazing. And you can really hear how defensive Chris Cuomo, the lesser, gets when his brother even challenges him. And he's very defensive, very insecure here. Cut 10.
What is the straight talk on what it's like working with the White House right now? I've heard you be deferential to the White House and saying, look, we're trying, we're doing it. But it seems like your needs are not decreasing at the kind of rate that you need them to deal with what you call a tsunami. What is the reality of dealing with the White House? Straight talk.
Yeah, I always do straight talk. And I would disagree with your use of the word deferential, but it's your show.
Don't forget it.
I've been very clear with the White House.
Don't forget it.
Yeah, it's hard to forget. I've been very clear. I have an immediate problem on the equipment.
Man. There's so much to analyze here. If I had a good psychologist who could break this down, huh? Yeah, no, it's your, and first of all, what's this weird audio that's going on?
Yeah.
And
there was feedback. He had one of those IFBs and it was feeding back so you could, like, there was a delay and you could hear it on the, it was really badly produced, but, you know, that's CNN. Yeah.
Well, you know, listen, it's your show. I'm keenly aware of that. I also want to remind you, I'm here because of Mom.
Yeah, I always do straight talk. And I would disagree with your use of the word deferential, but it's your show.
Don't forget it.
I've been very clear with the White House.
Don't forget it.
Yeah, it's hard to forget.
It's hard to forget because we all think, you know, not for nothing, but it's not doing too good, right? Let me do straight talk right now. You're being beat by a show called Bears Playing Ice Hockey on Nat Geo. Is that good straight talk for you, Christopher? By the way, did you notice, Donna, we call him Christopher?
Yes.
Christopher.
Oof. Christopher.
Yeah.
Oof. It reminds me of this, remember Christopher in The Sopranos?
Yes. Yeah.
Christopher.
Okay, I call you Chris, but that's what you like, so I'm going to call you Christopher. Now, the ending of this was so awful. The tension of this was just beyond. They try to disconnect the call. There's all this feedback. It's just weird. And the guy, the governor of New York State, and the lesser, his idiot lesser brother, and I mean, take a listen.
What happened with Pop was he delivered the right speech at the right time, and it was seen by so many. That's what you're doing right now that is being recognized and given acclaim. You're doing the job the right way when it matters, when eyes are on you. So thank God for that. The looks have to make you question the veracity of the... It must be very confusing for you because you know that what people are saying about how you look really can't be accurate. So it must be hard for you to make sense of what is real and what is true now. I feel for you.
La gelosia.
No.
Tu sei la gelosia.
Always straight. Right across the plate. Straight across the plate.
Little brother. Don't worry. There's still time. There's hope for you. One day you can grow up to be like me.
Listen.
I've tried to be like you my whole life.
Oh.
Look where it got me.
Oh, man.
Governor Andrew Cuomo, thank you very much for doing the job. Thank you for caring for the family. I love you. I'll talk to you after this.
You're better than me.
I'll talk to you after this.
You're better than me.
Only
I'm proud of
on the basketball
only
court.
Only on the basketball court.
Never, never.
That's what
don't
Pop
lie.
Said.
That's
what Pop said.
What Pop said.
Never.
Pop
he did not. He did
said.
Not. You never beat
the country
me
should
once.
Know.
Not once.
He said Andrew
know.
Has You're tremendous right. capability.
This is so bad. Oh, I can't take this anymore. This is so bad.
He said Andrew has tremendous capability. He is blessed in many ways. But he's got hands like bananas, and he can't play ball. Everybody knows it. Just saying. You're doing a great job, though.
You're doing a great job, though.
And spank you.
You know where I live.
Thank you.
I'll see you soon.
You know where I live.
Be well, Governor.
Spank you.
Be well, Governor.
Love you.
I do love him. The tension is real, though.
Wow.
The Love Gov and the Lesser. Thursday nights, 8 p.m., NBC.
Wow. Wait, which brother got spanked more? There's the spanking reference, so you know that's a private little inside thing. Like, who
oh,
got
yeah,
spanked?
You know Chris did, the idiot all the time. Governor Mario Cuomo. Christopher, get in here.
You get the belt.
Yeah, you're an idiot. What is this now? An idiot. Get in here now.
The tension is
Why
real.
Why can't you be more like your brother?
Wow, they have serious tension.
Right? I mean, all these years I've called him the lesser Cuomo, right? All these years I call him the lesser. And other people are like, no, it's Fredo. It's the lesser. You can clearly see what I mean by that reference of the lesser. This guy has so many issues because of how successful his brother is. And his brother just needles him and jabs him, right?
Yeah.
Just jabs him like a little hamster on a wheel, just playing with him
well,
the whole time.
Remember you reported, and this was a while ago, and I think you played an interview where, in fact, it was reported that his father... His iconic father had said that real public service is when you're an elected official
yeah.
and that journalism is a lesser public
right.
service. And that was a quote.
Exactly. He said, Christopher, journalism is not really public service. What your brother's doing
yes.
is really public service and serving America. What you're doing is clouding up what otherwise would be a great late night show, Bears playing ice hockey on Nat Geo. Man, I'll tell you what, the lesser Cuomo, that's, you know, the executives at CNN have to be just cringing, right? Listening to that.
Yeah.
Because they can't cut it off. It's the governor of New York State, but it's painful. It's terrible television. And there's audio problems and the feedback and the two of them can't hear each other. So it's, wait, what was that now? Pop said he doesn't like you. Pop says he doesn't like me. Huh?
It's kind of like
and forth.
It's kind of like a car wreck or, on the side of the road. You can't stop watching because
no,
it's bad.
You cannot turn it off. I'm telling you, there's no way to turn it off. All right. I have a guest coming up here. So I'll return to the Love Gov and the Lesser soon as possible.
Thanks for taking the Zeoli Show with you. Rich Zeoli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
As you probably know, in Pennsylvania, Governor Tom Wolf has made a whole bunch of executive orders lately. One of those executive orders was closing down all of the Pennsylvania fine wine and good spirits stores. I want to welcome to the program Chris Swanger. Chris is president and CEO of the Distilled Spirits Council. Hey, Chris, welcome to Talk Radio 1210. How you doing?
Hi, Rich. Good morning, and thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I was surprised when Governor Wolf shut down all of the state liquor stores. I thought it was a big mistake. And I live in Jersey, so at least our liquor stores are still open. But I didn't understand why he was doing this. So I guess yesterday he said he might reconsider. Is that right?
Those are the reports that we've heard. And obviously, we appreciate and recognize, each state governor is doing their level best to protect the general public and try to navigate, through these extraordinary times. But many, many states have been able to find distilled spirits, liquor stores, essential businesses, distilleries as essential businesses as well. So and many control states, as Pennsylvania is a control state. Many control states have done many innovative things to slow the traffic into the stores, to practice social distancing and so forth. So we're here to help and work with the governor. We recognize he's got a tough job and he's doing the best for Pennsylvania citizens. But, we've seen reports that Pennsylvania citizens or driving across state lines. And that's probably not what was intended to do, what he intended to do either. So we know he's very invested in protecting the health and safety of the employees and Pennsylvania citizens. But there's a lot of creative solutions that the governor could consider, and we're anxious to help him and work with him and find a solution that can protect the citizens and the store employees, but also provide Pennsylvania consumers access to great, great distilled spirits products.
So what would that solution be, in your opinion? Do you have one that you've laid out for the governor, Chris?
Sure. One recommendation that we made for consideration is just to be able to pick up distilled spirits when you order to go at restaurants. That's one option, to be able to pick up distilled spirits that way. Some control states have required that you call the store ahead of time, and only the store employees handles the bottles and the package is ready for you when you arrive at the store, right? Controlling the flow of traffic into the stores, right? We all have a call to action to practice social distancing. So a little bit of creativity, I think, will meet the needs of protecting the communities and at the same time provide great spirits to Pennsylvania consumers all around the state.
Chris Swanger is with me. He's president and CEO of the Distilled Spirits Council. They sent a letter to Governor Wolf urging him to reconsider the decision to close all fine wine and good spirits stores in Pennsylvania. Because you can't buy spirits in the grocery store, is that right?
Correct. And one of the things that we've been working on is for the governor to consider expanding access to spirits in package stores around the state as well. That's an opportunity, I think, in re-looking at the marketplace, right? We strongly support the control state system broadly. You know, they are an important customer for the distilled spirits industry, but there's ways to increase access so consumers don't have to drive so far. I think there's a big opportunity in Pennsylvania to expand the access of the products, ensure that the product goes to legal purchase age consumers and so forth. So there's a lot of creative things, and we're committed to sitting down and working with the governor on solutions. A couple other things I'd like to register as well, Rich, when I'm excited to report. You may have seen in the news, many of the distilleries around the country have pivoted to help make hand sanitizer. And that's just a wonderful, wonderful story. The impact on many of these distilleries around the country is going to be devastating because they've had to shut down their distilleries with regard to distillery visits and tastings and all of the above. So the industry is really, really stepping up. I'd like to say that. We just announced yesterday on behalf of the member companies of the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States, it's now up to almost $9 million where many of the distilled spirits companies, large and small, are stepping up and helping our bartenders community and restaurant employees and so forth. So, you know, the industry is very, very invested in doing our part to help beat COVID-19. It is a very, very serious health threat. But at the same time, we want to make sure that consumers can continue to enjoy the products. And more market access for Pennsylvanians for distilled spirits, I think, is a solution that the PLCB and the governor may want to consider when we get out of the challenges that we're all grappling with today.
Well, well said, Chris. I hope the governor listens to you, and I hope one day Pennsylvania has liquor freedom. We can disagree on that point, but I hope the governor listens to you, and I hope that he makes this happen. I think you're right on the money with that. So Chris Swanger, president, CEO of the Distilled Spirits Council. Thank you for coming on the show. Good luck. Keep us posted. Okay.
Great, Rich. Thank you. And to all your listeners, enjoy responsibly, obviously, and be safe, practice social distancing. And we look forward to working with the governor going forward of finding good consumer and safe practices to enjoy distilled spirit. So thank you.
You're welcome, Chris. Cheers.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
So this goes to the point I've been making every day, which is that had these governors had a plan in place months ago when they knew this virus was coming. Remember, we shut down travel to the affected areas of China in January. We knew this was coming. And we were greeted by a whole bunch of woke people telling us, you know, go to Chinatown. There's nothing to be afraid of. The flu's far worse. Mayor Kenney didn't have a plan. Governor Tom Wolf didn't have a plan. Governor Phil Murphy didn't have a plan. None of these governors had a plan. The LoveGov didn't have a plan. None of them did. And so as a consequence of not having plans, everything has to get shut down because there was no plan. You know, there was no plan for, okay, if this virus spreads and we got to do social distancing, how can we keep our restaurants open? How can we keep our liquor stores open? How can we ensure that these little startup distilleries that make gin, Philadelphia is becoming like the gin capital of the country now. How do we make sure that they're able to stay in business during this? But when you don't have a plan, you know, you fail. That's what happens. And that's what we're dealing with right now. And it's inexcusable. And the media should be calling out each of these governors. Every day we hear how heroic they are with all of their lockdown plans, and nobody asks them, why was there no plan in place? If a hurricane's coming, you have a plan. And Phil Murphy, the governor of New Jersey, and all his little minions on social media attacking me, and thank you, by the way, if you defended me, I appreciate it, like Dawn did. Thank you, Dawn. All these little minions attacking me on social media, on Twitter, because I'm asking the question that they don't want asked, which is this. Phil Murphy said, New Jersey! Super Bowl weekend. We had a plan. We had a meeting, New Jersey. We had meetings. Where are the notes from the meeting? Where was your emergency response plan to COVID-19 at the meeting? It may not have even had a name back then. Where was your response plan to the coronavirus back then? Actually, back then, you were still allowed to call it the Wuhan virus. So where was your response plan to the Wuhan virus from Super Bowl weekend? Where was it? I've been asking this question day in and day out to his people. One of his top senior advisors, which is a politically correct word of saying overpaid bureaucrat jackass, called me a shock jock, an AM shock jock. I'm also a constituent of his and a taxpayer. And I just want to know, where are the notes from the meeting? They won't answer me. They won't answer me. They distract you and they'll play little funny games on social media and trying to bring it back to Trump. They didn't have a plan. Governor Phil Murphy is a failure and he had no plan and he's lying to people right now. He's lying. Going out there pretending like they had all these meetings and sessions. Give me a break. None of them did. None of these governors did. And they all go back to the same thing. They go, oh, but Trump. No. The federal government is not supposed to be in charge of this stuff. The states are. You heard Andy McCarthy say it. But this is the little game they play. So now we got to deal with all these business closures and people potentially losing their jobs and their life savings and businesses being shut down because there was no plan of action to say things like, well, what if we practice social distancing in restaurants? What if we enable more pickups, curbside pickup? You put the plan in place in January if the virus spreads and becomes a bad thing. This way you can implement it in March. Instead, we got the mayor going to Chinatown. That's what we got in February. Mayor Jim Kenney went down and had shrimp dumplings in Chinatown, telling people it's safe. There was nothing to worry about. And the health commissioner of Philadelphia comes out and says the flu is worse. The flu is worse. And meanwhile, while they were doing that, the president did what? Shut down the border travel from the region. And how did people like Mayor Kenney and Helen Gim, Councilwoman Gim, and all these other people react? They reacted by saying racism and xenophobia. It's not about Chinese people. It's about the government of China, the oppressive regime that lied to the world, covered up this virus, would not let their doctors speak out, would not let the people speak out. And because of that, now the world is dealing with a global pandemic. It's not racist against Chinese people to call. In fact, the Chinese people need an advocate for them. They need somebody to step up on their behalf and point out what the government of their country did, because they can't do it. If they do it, they'll be killed or put in prison. They can't do it. So we have to do it. And that's why it's crucial to keep reminding people where this virus started. Not because we want people to be beat down on the streets because they're Asian, because, by the way, that doesn't even happen. But it's because we want people to realize what the Chinese government did. The horrors of this government. But unfortunately, you have too many people covering for them, and it really frustrates me. It frustrates me enormously. 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. We are, you and I, obviously dealing with what do we do? You know, how soon do we go back to work? How soon does all this happen again? And what is the balance there between the economy and keeping everybody safe? And how do we do that? There is a bill right now federal government is dealing with. It's called a stimulus package, as you know. They may have an agreement on this today. We're not sure. Mitch McConnell was very, very fired up as Mitch McConnell can be. And he was speaking about this yesterday on the floor of the Senate. Let's start with cut two.
So let me give the American people a taste of the outstanding issues we woke up to this morning. Here are some of the items on the Democratic wish list over which they choose, to block this legislation last night. Tax credits for solar energy and wind energy. Provisions to force employers to give special new treatment to big labor. And listen to this, new emission standards for the airlines. Are you kidding me? Democrats won't let us fund hospitals or save small businesses unless they get to dust off the Green New Deal. I'd like to see Senate Democrats tell New York City doctors and nurses who are literally overrun as we speak, that they're filibustering hospital funding and more masks because they want to argue with the airlines over their carbon footprint. I'd like to see Senate Democrats tell small business employees in their states who are literally being laid off every day that they're filibustering relief that will keep people on the payroll because Democrat special interest friends want to squeeze employers while they're vulnerable.
You know, this stimulus is not going to save the world. It won't. It's going to save and help a lot of people. But the only thing it's going to save our country, of course, is get the economy up and going again. But there are some short-term provisions in here that are really, really crucial, right? Unfortunately, what's happened is we have loaded this bill. They've loaded this bill, I should say, with all kinds of pork. You even have Susan Collins fired up over this. Susan Collins of Maine. Take a listen.
Surely, in this time of extreme crisis for our country, when people are getting sick, when people are dying from the coronavirus, when we are facing unemployment rates, which could go as high as 20%, according to the Treasury Secretary, surely we ought to be able to pull together and work quickly to respond to the needs of the American people. Mr. President, I cannot believe the objections to proceeding to this package. Is this package perfect? No, but that's why negotiations are still going on. But don't we want to act quickly to provide relief to the American workers? This is disgraceful. We do not have time. Time is not on our side.
Yeah, I mean,
let's get the job
done. Going. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks for taking the Zeoli Show with you. Rich Zeoli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
I'm losing track of time. Let's say hi to Dawn. Good morning, Dawn. How are you today?
Hey, good morning. Doing great. 44 degrees. The Yellow Show News sponsored by Mercedes Northeast Region. So crime in Philadelphia is up by double-digit percentages in the first 3 months of this year so far. This according to a newly released report by the city. And the stats show property crimes and violent crimes are up 16% and 11% respectively. The largest increases, retail theft up 59%, aggravated assault up 20%. So we'll see if there's a dip in crime during these stay-at-home orders during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Well, there's a dip in crime because they're not arresting anybody anymore, right? So there's that.
Well, there's that. Well, they say that there's still, you know, any kind of aggravated assault or violent crimes, they're still arresting
right
people. So news you can use. I thought this would be a fun little segment. So there is an unbelievable amount of fake news. And as Rich said yesterday, there are a lot of scams that watchdog groups have said, watch out, beware of a lot of scams trying to get your money, get into your accounts, that sort of thing. But there's fake news, too. For example, is it true that you can kill COVID-19 by sitting in a sauna or using a blow dryer to pump hot air up your nostrils?
Stop.
I swear to God, I'm not making this up. So the CDC gave a response saying, no, if the virus is in your nostrils already, it's already attached to your mucous membrane, so do not use a blow dryer to blow hot air up your nostrils. Another question out there that's gone viral, is it true that warmer weather can actually kill the virus. So the World Health Organization responded to that one saying, no, warmer weather, you know, may allow people to spread out, get out there, not spend so much time inside close together. But there's no evidence that, you know, the climate or the weather is going to suddenly kill the virus. And right. finally, the third one I'll give you is eating garlic, does that kill COVID-19?
No.
And doctors say garlic is very good for you. But no, there's no scientific evidence to prove that it would kill the virus or vampires for that matter.
Unless the vampire has COVID-19.
Oh, no.
Have we thought of that?
No, that's a good one.
In which case, the warm weather, the sunshine, the garlic combo platter. Huh? Saying.
I love it. I love it. So from vampires to bats, we know Rich's favorite superhero is Batman. So China has a real-life Batwoman. That's what they call her. She's actually a renowned scientist with CDC China. So she's famous for hunting down viruses from SARS to the new coronavirus. And all of these are related. Their coronavirus is a umbrella term. So this is Wuhan-based virologist Shi Zhengli, and she reports that she has identified dozens of deadly SARS-like viruses in bat caves. She warns there are more out there. And it's a really interesting article and study.
Wow.
It's published in Scientific American. So you can,
yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me at all, you know, and they still sell these bats at these wet markets.
Yes. And if you look at Chinese, like, recipes, there's actually a bat soup recipe. I was just looking up recipes. So
is it cream-based? Because I'm trying to avoid cream.
So I don't think it's cream-based.
Okay,
definitely
good.
Not bat-based. But I thought that was an interesting little, you know, tidbit there. By the way,
a male bat with a SARS virus in a cave, still a better Batman than Ben Affleck. That's for the record. No, but she's warning about this because this is not the last time we're going to have to deal with a pandemic like this, a SARS-like
yes.
virus that comes from a bat, the bat-pig combo platter, the bat little weird aardvark thing
yes.
combo platter. Like, this is not, unless we deal with the fact that there are some pockets of the world and places in China where they have these horrible markets and unsanitary conditions and they're eating food that they shouldn't be eating.
Yes. And that's what the scientists are saying, that it's important to track the origin of this, because in fact, she's finding in these caves, because there are all these coronaviruses. So this is like the SARS-CoV-2 virus. That's actually what COVID-19 is. It's a SARS branch of coronavirus. So in any event, she's saying, look, we have to track the origin. And in fact, she's been doing this for like 20 years. She discovered more of these viruses in these bats, in these caves. So in any event, we have an important interview coming up, but it's scientificamerican.com if you want to read about it.
I want to check it out. I like chicken noodle bat soup. If you ever had that, or it's really helps with the COVID-19, the sniffles. So.
It's a sin. NBC 10 First Alert forecast today, nearly 60 degrees, a nice day to get out. Clouds are starting to clear by noon. Tomorrow, rainy again, blustery, 47 degrees. Thursday, bright, sunny, 60 degrees. Friday, 62. Showers early, but Friday's not a washout. So Friday afternoon should be nice. Weekend ahead looks mild and rainy. So sponsored by Mercedes Northeast Region, good things come to those who don't wait with more affordable models than ever before. The spring event, the perfect time to consider that Mercedes-Benz you've been dreaming of. Go to mbusa.com/springevent. to view inventory. I'm Dawn, live Zioli Show News.
Thank you, Dawn. Appreciate it. We do have a guest joining me. I've been talking about the Second Amendment. I've been talking about the governor of Pennsylvania and these other states, too. They're limiting our Second Amendment freedoms by saying that gun stores are not essential. But I'm very, very happy to welcome to the program a great guest who's written a lot on the subject. Stephen Gutowski. Steve, I want to welcome you to the show officially for the first time. I know it won't be the last time. So good morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. By the way, do you go by Steve or Steven? That's the first thing I got to figure out.
Steven.
All right, good. So my son's Patrick. I make him go by Patrick versus Pat. So that's good. I respect that,
there
by the way.
Nice.
You have been writing extensively over at the Washington Free Beacon about how the Pennsylvania Supreme Court had, they greenlit the mandatory gun store closures that Governor Tom Wolf had ordered. Give us just a background for those that don't know on what the governor ordered in Pennsylvania and what the case was about.
Yeah, so the governor has ordered all of what he has determined to be non-life-sustaining businesses to close. This has actually affected my own family. My father's contracting business has been closed now. Near Philadelphia, and And he doesn't include gun stores in that list of life-sustaining businesses. So they're being forced to close as well. There was an emergency challenge to this to try and block the order as it applies to gun stores. But basically, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court decided they denied that order, that request to block the order. So it's gone into effect now, and the gun stores in Pennsylvania are closed.
Is there any relief that the United States Supreme Court could offer?
Yeah, that is one of the options. The plaintiffs in the case could appeal on an emergency basis to the Supreme Court, although it would be, you know, a long shot. It's not something very common for the Supreme Court to do, mm-hmm. although this is obviously not a very common event happening right now. So you could see that happen, absolutely.
It just seems to me, for example, you know, if I believe there was going to be social unrest and there's going to be a Great Depression coming and I wanted to protect my family, which I have a constitutional right to do, I have no way now to exercise that right because the gun stores are closed. I mean, I don't know. It seems to me like it's the equivalent of saying, well, we don't consider the media to be essential, so people don't have the ability to get their news now. The journalists don't have the ability to get their message out under the First Amendment. If gun stores are the vehicle by which we have to exercise our Second Amendment freedom, to order them closed then is literally now obstructing a constitutional right.
Yeah, that's essentially what the dissent in the case said. There were three justices that joined the dissent out of the seven justices, so this was basically a split decision. To deny this request. And, you know, obviously the constitutional issues certainly complicate things. We all know that the virus is a very legitimate threat. And, you know, so I think most people are on board with a lot of the steps that are being taken, but there are these thorny constitutional issues because, I mean, especially in Pennsylvania, because Philadelphia, for example, has announced that they're no longer making certain kinds of arrests for at least for nonviolent crimes. And then at the same time, they're not allowing people to go and buy guns to protect themselves. So, right. You know, it raises a lot of issues.
Yeah, it really does. And and again, they are the vehicle by which it's the only option I have to be able to protect myself, right, is to buy a gun from a gun store. I can't get them any other way, despite all the, you know, the myths out there of how easy they are to get online. That's not true. I feel like this is one of those times when a state is trying to stop what is a federally protected right in the Constitution. I would hope the federal courts could intervene here. So where does the case stand now? Has a brief been filed with the Supreme Court? Has an appeal been filed?
Not as of yet. There has been some talk that the governor might amend his order, as they've done in places like Illinois or Virginia. You know, everyone's still trying to figure out how these things are going to work because we haven't had to ever do these kinds of shutdowns in the last 100 years in the United States. So people are still trying to work their way through how to do it. New Jersey shut down their background check system altogether, so it's literally impossible to buy a gun there. But Illinois has made an exception for gun stores. Virginia's allowing businesses to stay open if they have 10 or fewer people in the business at a time, including gun stores. So, you know, we still have to work out how this is going to actually work in practice. And you might very well see a challenge go to the Supreme Court. I would think New Jersey's order is probably going to end up there because it's even stricter than Pennsylvania's. There really isn't any way for someone to legally purchase a gun in this entire state right now. There's still, right. You know, you can still do private sales in Pennsylvania, but there's obviously huge constitutional questions with all this.
Yeah, there really are. And these are unprecedented times. And I'll tell you what, Stephen Gutowski, I really feel like these governors, they're Democrats. They're not in any way, shape or form supporters of the Second Amendment. And I feel like they're using this opportunity, quite frankly, to try to disarm the population as best they possibly can under this. And, you know, the other question I have is under some of these executive orders, could they demand people turn over their AR-15s, for example?
I don't think so, because it's hard to judge. There'd be very limited justification for any sort of connection between possession of a gun and spreading the virus. The reasoning here is that, you know, obviously they're closing all kinds of stores, and they're just not making gun stores part of the essential group of businesses. And so there hasn't been any move to do something like that anywhere.
Well, didn't Murphy put in something in his executive order, the governor of Jersey, about societal, keep societal unrest or something like that? Like, that was one of the points that he was making. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly some of the government officials in places like California and New Jersey have said, you know, they don't want people panic buying guns because they think that's dangerous.
Right.
So there have been comments like that, but there hasn't been any action on that front in terms of, like, confiscating guns or anything like that.
That's good. It just, you know, the power that these governors have in these emergency situations is it's amazing, and I feel like there's no real check on them other than us at the polls. But, you know, for my state of Jersey, it's lost, but hopefully Pennsylvanians can at least wake up and, you know, do the right thing come next year, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, listen, I appreciate you coming on the show. I appreciate you writing about this. Where can people follow you, Stephen?
You can find me on freebeacon.com, and I'm also on Twitter at STEPHENGUTOWSKI.
Oh, excellent stuff. I appreciate the insight. Stephen Gutowski, staff writer at the Washington Free Beacon. We'll talk to you again soon, my friend. Stay safe, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.